Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matter Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak to Byron Stripling. Byron Stripling is the artistic director and conductor of the Columbus Jazz Orchestra. He debuted at Carnegie Hall with Skitch Henderson and the New York Pops, and has performed with major orchestras, including the Boston Pops and the National Symphony. Featured at the Hollywood Bowl and on PBS's Evening at the Pops, Stripling gained recognition as the lead trumpeter for the Count Basie Orchestra and has played with jazz legends like Dizzy Gillespie, Woody Herman, and Dave Brubeck, as well as the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra and the GRP All-Star Big Band. In this interview, Byron and I speak about the power of music to help people through hard times, the importance of programming Pops concerts, and the importance of creativity. He is guest conducting Fascinating Rhythm, a Gershwin celebration, which commemorates 125 years of the composer's musical genius, and will be presented by the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra on Saturday, November 16th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available at bpo.org. I hope you enjoy my interview with Byron. Byron Stripling, thank you so much for chatting with me today. How are you?
I'm doing great and good to be with you.
Excellent. I'd love to start off by asking, have you been to Buffalo before?
Many times. I love Buffalo. I went to school in Rochester, New York, at the Eastman School of Music, and there would be times I would play with the great luminaries in Buffalo, the sax player that used to play with Dave Brubeck. His name is, I can't remember it right now, but there's so many. Buffalo has a great tradition of great jazz, which is why I love it so much. One of my dear friends, Andy Weinsler, lives there. He's a sax player in the area. So awash with talent. I love Buffalo. I've been many, many times, and I love it there, and I like wings, just so you know.
Excellent. I have to ask, is there a story from your youth that connects to what you do now? And what you do now is so sort of multifaceted and multi-encompassing, but I'm really talking about kind of being a musician.
Well, certainly. I mean, I grew up in a great house and a family that music was how we lived and how we survived. You know, there's an old song that says, people that don't realize how important music is to me, I'll preface by saying that. And there's a saying that says that there's something missing, something isn't there. And for me, if there was no music playing, something would be missing. Something would not be there for me. That happened because my father was a choir director, which means that you have to be in the choir if your father's a choir director. He was the church director, that stuff. He was a soloist classically. So I grew up with classical music all through my house, especially in the mornings, and my father would play it all morning. Then he would go to work and he would teach. He was a classical singer, so he taught classical voice. And then when he got home from that, it was all about jazz. So he'd play Miles Davis, Dizzy Gillespie, Clark Terry, Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Ben Webster, so many others. And then after he had a drink after dinner, then he'd go into Motown and we'd have that sound all playing. So music was central to everything we did in our lives. And it was because of my father and my immediate family, all, by the way, who have left me. My mother died at 59. I know it's too much information, but it's a part of my story. Died at 59 of cancer. My father died 2 years ago at the age of 86 with dementia. And my father, my brother passed away of ALS about 2 years ago, right after my dad. Hard time for me. The one thing that got me through to speak to what your question's about was music. That I knew that you could sing myself, or I could sing myself and play myself through a depression. I could sing and play myself through the heartbreak that I experienced having lost all of the people that I love so much. And so where does music sit in my life? And what is one of those stories? The story is all music. It's all encompassing of the greatest music I heard in my life, from live to all the way through my family and hanging out with them. I was going to say one more thing, but I forgot.
That's okay. No, I got chills thinking that I'm studying this sort of method of speech and speaking that's kind of based in exactly your healing, or rather what you're speaking about in terms of how the voice, how sound, how music can get us through some of the most difficult things in life. So I just felt a real sense of like, oh, I got real chills when you said that. So thank you so much for sharing that. I love on all of your bios, you list both the Eastman School of Music, which you spoke about, but also Interlaken. I am lucky enough to actually have taught at Interlaken Arts Camp for 2 summers. So when I saw it there, I got excited to say, wow, we both have a little bit of Traverse City in our blood. Was there a moment at either of these institutions, or maybe earlier or later, or even with your father on the choir, where you said, ah, that's it, I know music is going to be my life?
Well, I'm one of those people that knew early, which is frustrating when you have kids, as I do, because I'm from the time they're born, I'm like, what are you going to do when you grow up? What are you going to do when you grow up? And you have to let people find their own way. The reason it was confusing to me and my wife had to like handcuff me and say, shut up, you know, because I was trying to like, okay, and what are you going to do? Like, what's your thing? You know, and they've both basically found it. For me, it was no question. And going to Interlaken, and here's stuff I never talk about too, but you get to hear it first. I wanted to go to Interlaken. I went to 2 summer camps there. Back then, the summer camps were 6 weeks. I don't know how old you are, but I'm so old. I played trumpet at the Last Supper. That's how old I am.
Come on. No, no, no.
I was there. I'm in the Da Vinci painting. If you see the Last Supper painting by Leonardo.
That's ridiculous. No, it still is. When I was there, it was 6 weeks as well. There were 6 week sessions. Yeah.
So we did the six weeks and I was so enamored of it. I got a scholarship the second half. And I told my mom, I have to go to the Interlaken Arts Academy, which is a 4-year for people that don't know. We didn't have any money. My mom told me later, years later, she goes, I just took money out of my teacher's retirement. You're never supposed to do that. But the love that I got from my parents, that's the kind of stuff that they did. You know, I often say I am who I am because somebody loved me. And as I've already alluded to, those 3 people that I mentioned to you are the thing that sustained me to this day. And I hope that I can offer that, not to my only kids, but people I meet behind stage, in front of stage and all that. I want to give that same love to them. And it all comes through the medium of great music.
That is true. You know, you sort of said that you were talking about your own children kind of finding their pathway. And, you know, as a teacher, sometimes I see students, what I'll say, finding just jazz or discovering jazz, and it unlocks or it opens something inside of them that maybe wasn't there before, opens a new pathway that they didn't even know exist. Was there a moment in your life when you feel like this happened for you, where jazz sort of opened up a kind of new pathway, a new place, or was it just always there?
I mean, honestly, I have to be like you say, I think it was always there, but I was immediately, especially with my first band directors. And by the way, those are my heroes, the guys in elementary school when we first started playing, as well as my junior high band director, Mr. Schlick, who's like, you're good. Stand out in front of the concert band and play a featured solo. I didn't know I could do that. See, that's again, I am who I am because somebody loved me. They had a director that was like, you know, he said, I'm going to put you out there. And then, you know, going on to college, I always have that. See, music is so special. And what you do as a teacher is so special. Because for me, I'm sure many of your students are like this. When you're in the math room, nothing resonates with you. It's just like, I'm like trying not to fall asleep. Social studies, I'm listening. It's interesting, but I want to get back somewhere else. All the other subjects, English and all that. You know, my father would send me back letters that I would write to him at summer camp. And he'd correct them in red ink because my dad also taught English, you know. And I'm like, leave me alone, Dad. I just want to play the trumpet. I don't care about spelling and correct pronunciation and all that kind of stuff. Here's what happens. When I went in the band room, a light came on for me. Everything was different when I was in the band room. And what I know in my heart, the arts is can be that for all students and all people throughout the world. Any young person, if you're looking for your identity, you can't find it. Maybe you're the person that wears purple hair and all that. There's a place for you on the theater stage. They are waiting for you. They want you to sing in their production, or they want you to play a clarinet or whatever. Or maybe you're the art guy where you're just not assimilating, but maybe you're quiet. And when you draw something, something ignites the people who see your painting and also ignites you, the passion and love that comes out of your art. So what I say all this to say is, it's about how the arts can be appreciated by others who don't do it, and how it opens up the people who are ready to give you their heart through painting and art and drawing, through music, whether it be jazz, classical, rock, pop, whatever it is, through any of these great mediums of art, which we so need so much. What we don't need probably is more TikTok and more Instagram and all these things that kind of separate people from each other. So if, I mean, this is to your people out there, I speak to you. If you're wondering why I don't feel so good, or, you know, asking yourself, man, I'm bored, I'm this, I'm that. You need to be around a human. You need to feel the experience of what it feels like to make music with somebody. And you also need to be in an audience and absorb what comes out of that stage. And when it's filled with greatness, you will forever be changed. I went to see, I conducted the Pittsburgh Symphony as their principal pops conductor, but I went to a classical concert, which I try to do as much as I can. And this lady played a Lalo, one of the great Spanish composers, I think, a violin concerto. And then after that, I can't remember what song it was. It's an old great classical song just on violin. And I started crying. I'm like, little sappy me, what? I never cry. But there was something in that music that got me, and it reached into my heart and turned me around. And I was probably thinking about all I'd gone through in the last few years with the deaths of my parents and all that. And the music did it for me. It wasn't a bad cry. It was a cry of love. It was a cry of devotion. It was a cry of, I'm going to keep giving people music so they will lift me up so the music will lift them up as it has lifted me up.
I always say this on this podcast, and so some of those maybe regular listeners are like, I'm tired of you saying that, please stop. But whenever I sort of attend the BPO or go to any live music event, and especially, I mean, amplified music is amazing, but when it's unamplified, I almost feel like it becomes like a vibrational experience. The room literally vibrates with the sound, with the like almost like soul of the people that are playing. It comes out in the sound and it does something to you and stays with you. Sometimes I think longer than the huge amplified show with a lot of visuals or stuff like that. It just sticks with you in a different way.
Yes, absolutely. I'm right with you on that. And that's why we listen to music. This is why we hear, this is why we exist. This is why you and I are kindred spirits in terms of learning about music and teaching. I'm all in. I'm with you. And then I want to go on stage and play it.
So I'd love to ask, and I know that this is like sometimes shooting fish in a barrel, but if someone maybe doesn't know about Pops concerts, why are Pops concerts important programming for symphony orchestras?
I think, I mean, there's a number of reasons. The genre as it exists, pop music with a full orchestra, is in some ways relatively new. When I first started going to Europe and somebody booked me to play with orchestras and do a tribute to Louis Armstrong, I had people come backstage just like, that was amazing. But we didn't know what you were going to do. So Pops isn't like a big thing in like European countries and other countries. There's this real separation of, okay, you're going to do Pops music and I like classical music and I like orchestra. So I'm just going to stick with that. So it's in some ways, maybe 50 plus years old, a little longer. It's kind of new to people. So if I could describe what it is, it's like just taking great music and doing arrangements that of songs that you know, but adding strings to them. Some of them already have strings. So I do, there's a great, it's called a song called The Philadelphia Sound. And there's a concert where I open up with that. It was a famous song back in the day. You might even notice it if you heard the Philadelphia Sound or something like that. Anyway, that was the beginning of trying to put strings, which we've always done it, but with concerts, Tony Bennett always had strings behind him. Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, all of the great artists, they always had this, but now the orchestra people have blown it up and say, let's see that stuff live that you also see on the stage. So that in a really small way, that's explaining what it is.
No, thank you. You're coming to Buffalo for Fascinating Rhythm, a Gershwin celebration tribute to George Gershwin, which is marking 125 years of his musical genius. So if he were still alive, he would be 125, actually 126. Why does Gershwin have such an enduring appeal?
It's a great question. Let's go back to the beginning of Gershwin. Russian Jewish heritage comes over from there to escape it, goes through Ellis Island, a little bit in New York City, then ends up in Brooklyn. There he can hear sounds of what's going on in American music. He's already been trained a little bit by classical music that continues. They move to the Brooklyn area. They get comfortable there. Gershwin is still composing. He's also going uptown to Harlem to see the Cotton Club and check out what's there. And notice other Black performers. As your audience may or may not know, the Cotton Club was white audiences with black performers, right? So Duke Ellington's band played there, on and on and on. Okay, so he's hearing that, and then he's meeting Stravinsky and Schoenberg in the meantime. So if we want to know what George Gershwin is, he is the American dream. That you can come, and they're like, their family is kind of freeing Nazis too around that time, or the crazy stuff that was happening. And they get to come to this place called America. They go through Ellis Island, and now they realize, and we know now, that anything is possible in America. And Gershwin demonstrates that for us. He comes from nothing, and he gives us this gift of Rhapsody in Blue and Concerto in F and Porgy and Bess, where he takes the influences that he saw in the Cotton Club of these black singers and big bands, and he makes it into Porgy and Bess. And who does that? Like, this Jewish white guy, like, creates this masterpiece, and he gets the right actors and artists in there to do it. This is America. This is what we do here. And this is the power of music. So Summertime, if that's one of your favorite songs, you're going to hear it on our concert at some point. It might just be an encore, but don't tell anybody, please. This is all between us and the podcast, right? But the songs that you love from Gershwin that I can get legally, you will hear those songs, and with great artists behind us.
That's incredible. Thank you. You know, recently the BPO just got a new piano, and part of that was a Gershwin concerto, and it really felt like you could hear sort of like New York in the music, right? Which I think is just so amazing, kind of being in New York and thinking about sort of what that was like. I'd love to ask you about the relationship between Gershwin standards and jazz. And also, like, sort of what's going to be played at the BPO. I know that Gershwin wrote some things, but I would imagine that some things too have been rearranged for the BPO, or maybe not. And is there any room for improvisation or any kind of other jazz within the program at the BPO? That's like three questions, but I think you can do it.
I want you to know that there's always room for improvisation when you have a jazz musician on stage. That's what we live for, and we never know what's going to come out. So the answer is yes. So we got that one. What was the first one? Go back to the first. Do you remember?
Yeah, just about like the relationship between Gershwin standards and jazz, right? And sort of like when some of them are written, some of them are rearranged. What's interesting about rearranging them? Why do we play with them?
Right, right. So we are looking to provide like a framework. We got Gershwin's music that we're going to draw everything from that. There's a few things I do, like an Irving Berlin tune and a couple others that aren't Gershwin, but it's all from that same period of time when the roots were so fertile with great people producing this kind of music. So with Gershwin, what we're going to do is like, we'll take a song like, "It's Wonderful, It's Marvelous, That You Should Care For Me," but we're going to put that into like, do like a bossa nova behind it, and boom, chaka, bam, chicken, ga, ga, ga. And so what we do is we use those rhythmic things, those melodic and harmonic things, and we sort of change those up just a little bit. You hear the music, we entice you, you fall in love with it, you're patting your foot, you're like, yeah, baby, I know that song, a little different now, but that's cool. And then somebody adds improvisation to it, to your point, and they're like, I didn't know that was part of the song, that's pretty cool. And then we'll bring you back at the end to hear that melody. So that's kind of how we program the whole thing.
That sounds amazing.
There might have been something else you asked me, number two, but I forgot it already.
I think you got it. I think we got it. We got it.
I think that's your way of me saying I'm talking too much.
No. Listen, I don't think that anybody wants to hear me talk about it. But also, right, like, it's just the conversation's kind of leading us to someplace else. That's all. I don't think you're talking too much at all. I think this is exactly what I live for. You know, these conversations, like, to talk to incredible world caliber artists about like amazing pieces of art is such a privilege that I get to do. So thank you for answering, right? I could probably, what I'm actually doing is like cutting questions, because I'm like, this is so good, I want to be respectful of your time. We could probably talk for 4.5 hours.
But see, I don't know that anybody
would want that episode. Yeah, nobody would want that episode. For those folks who may not have had a chance to see the BPO before, how might Fascinating Rhythm, A Gershwin Celebration be the perfect entry point for them?
Well, good question. So if you haven't heard these songs, you know, we've got songs like Fascinating Rhythm, Strike Up the Band. These are classic songs. If you haven't heard and aren't familiar with Gershwin, then this is a new opening for you. And I want to guarantee people that, again, just if we can go back a little bit, we talked about what our lives are consumed with now, basically social media and wasting tons and tons of time on there. This is a different thing. If you're new to the Buffalo Philharmonic, I want you to come there with your ears open and sit there and listen. If you have questions, ask the guy next to you. He might be able to help you. But I just want you to experience something that you can't, a record player, a CD player, an MP3 player does not give you what a live performance gives you. You're going to see people up there with violins, violas, cellos, and basses. You're going to see a woodwind section with oboes, clarinets, and bassoons. You're going to see a brass section with trombone, trumpets, and tubas. And you're going to hear a percussion section. And you're going to hear a jazz rhythm section. One of the greatest jazz piano players will be there, Bobby Floyd. We have a great drummer there with you, Jim Rubb. We have a bass player that's local. Hopefully they got the same guy that I absolutely love. So that's the palette of what you have to open yourself up to. And I love when people are coming for the first time. I have to tell you a quick story. So I just did Rhapsody in Blue with Pittsburgh. And so we finished, we got to the very end. If you know Rhapsody in Blue, it's just at the very end, you're holding this chord and the piano player is giving these chords like bang, bang, bang. And then I get the cut, like, and cut off. And at the end of that, I won't say the bad word, all figured. I'll say a different one. But at the end of that, as soon as we, can I say a bad word? It's not that bad.
I think we can say a bad word, sure.
I'll say a bad word. So we finished it and it's complete silence for 1 second when you finish it. And there was a guy who had his first orchestra concert. We finished the last, I give the cutoff and he goes, holy shit. And everybody in the audience hears it. Like, but that's what you want. And he was a first timer hearing classical, or that's not really classical music, but it's quasi classical music.
Yeah, or even just an orchestra, right? Or experiencing an orchestra in front of him. Yeah.
Hearing an orchestra for the first time. That was his response. And that's the response I want. I want you to love the music and profess it any way you can. If you want to say, amen, brother, go ahead. If you want to say, holy shoot, go ahead and say that too. But I want the music to reach into your heart and take you on a journey and have you leaving, as they used to say, you won't leave here like you came. That's the way I'll sort of end this. Like, if you are an attentive listener, because I have to be honest, people come to shows now and they pay a whole bunch of money to sit in the front row and they're on their phone the whole time. It's like, guys, put the phone away for a second and just live your life and live and breathe what's coming off of that stage, which is live music, which will change your life forever.
Absolutely. Those are my questions, but I always like to end an interview by asking, is there anything that you feel was left unsaid or anything you'd like to share with our listeners before we say goodbye?
Well, to say goodbyes is hard. I'm hard. Good with byes. We have to say, I'll see you soon, because then I'll start crying if I know this is a goodbye. So
yeah, we'll see you soon. We'll see you at Fascinating Rhythm. But before we hang up the call today, anything?
Yeah, I can't, I've talked so much that I've tired myself out. I'm tired of hearing me talk.
Well, thank you very much for your generosity. Really, it was incredible to talk to you. And like I said, I could talk to you all day, and I really appreciate your time. And we can't wait to welcome you back to Buffalo for the Gershwin performance.
If you happen to come to the concert, would you come backstage and say hi?
I will. Yes. If I'm able to come, my work schedule and stuff like that.
I understand.
If I absolutely am,
we're close. Absolutely. I need to meet you personally, because you're a great podcaster and you sound great. You're right. Ask the right questions. Because most of the time I start these things and people go, what's your name again? What instrument you said you played?
Oh, I would fall through the floor. That would be so embarrassing.
You're thinking I'm joking. I'm totally serious. I just appreciate how great you are as a podcaster.
Thank you very much. It was really excellent to speak to you today. Have a great one. Take care.
Talk to you. Bye-bye.
Well, that was my interview with Byron. Fascinating Rhythm, a Gershwin celebration, which commemorates 125 years of the composer's musical genius, will be presented by the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra on Saturday, November 16th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available at bpo.org. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides, posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising, Local Matters Studios.